Regions believes that being a bank means serving the community. Regions is shining the light on local food banks as they feed our neighbors in need. See how you can help at regions.com/foodbank. The Regions branches are open by drive-through or lobby appointment only. Bank safely and securely from almost anywhere with Regions online banking or mobile banking. Data rates may apply. Regions Bank. Member FDIC.
The Duly Noted Podcast is brought to you by Vistar Credit Union. We never forget that it's your money. And ABC Fine Wine and Spirits. Always be celebrating.
This is the Duly Noted Podcast. Everything Florida Gators with your host, Pat Dooley.
Okay, welcome into another edition of the Duly Noted Podcast. This is the preview section of the podcast because on Tuesdays we wrap up what happened over the weekend. On Thursdays we talk about what may or may not happen. We don't know for sure, obviously. It's going to be a weird situation being in the ballpark. I'm just so glad we're going to be able to watch the game at the stadium. I would have told you 6 weeks ago, a month ago, you know, that I was happy just to be at home because you could watch the second game. But now, after watching a game on TV and having to write about it, that's something that Robbie and I both have missed a game once in our lives, but for different reasons. But we weren't covering that game. But to be trying to keep track of things, it's almost impossible off TV. We realize how hard that is. So we're looking forward to being there and watching the game and being able to say, hey, I see what yard line they're on. Okay, great. I did a poll today, and it already got about 1,000 votes. And if it gets more, it's fine. But I wanted to get it done in time for this podcast because I'm curious what Gator fans would tell me about the reason they aren't buying or didn't buy tickets for the game. Now, again, at 6 o'clock today, they cut it off, and then they're going to whatever's left, they're going to distribute to students. I know Kelsey, my daughter, is looking for, hoping that she gets one, when they distribute them, because she didn't get in. You know, and it doesn't count against the one. Like, you get to go to one game if you're in the lottery, but this isn't going to count against it. So, getting the students in there is big to not only to have fans in there make a little noise, they're more likely to make noise. I know it's going to be an interesting situation. Anyway, I did this poll, and the whole point was to ask why you didn't buy the tickets. And what I suspected is the number one reason was the number one reason, and that was the ticket price. 33% of the vote is what it got. I asked Scott Strickland about that. He said he didn't think it was the price, the money. He thought it was more that people just didn't want to deal with everything. Now, again, these other three reasons add up to 66%, 67% of the reasons. And I think when you add them all together, they are the overwhelming reason. Does that make any sense? Like, the number one vote getter, I don't think is the most overwhelming reason. I think price has something to do with it, because what they've done is they've taken the booster fees and prorated them per game for where you're going to be sitting. People are acting like, oh, I can't believe you have to pay this much to go to a game. People were already paying that much to go to games. They were just paying it all at once. So 33% of the ticket prices, but 25% having to go through all the protocols that you had to deal with, but no tailgating, I think, is a huge reason why. And then, of course, 17% were because of the having to wear a mask is what – I mean, again, this is an unscientific poll, but fear of the virus was also in the 25%. I couldn't read my writing there for a second. So I think if you add it all together, there are a lot of reasons. And when people say, are there excuses? There's no excuse for not going to this game, because there's no right, no wrong – it is not wrong to not want to go to the game. I totally understand why somebody would not want to go to this game here in the world we're living in. So I get it. You don't want to wear a mask. You can't tailgate. You're just going to walk up to the game and sit down and watch it. And then maybe you are worried about the virus still. You have issues. Ticket prices are high. But again, like I said, they aren't any higher than they normally are. So anyway, I just took that poll because I was kind of curious. But I do think it's a combination of all of the different reasons. I did get a laugh today, though. By the way, Scott Strickland was named the the Business Journal's Athletic Director of the Year. And that's a nice honor. And he tweeted a picture out of the gift that Dan Mullen gave him. And he gave him that little tiny bottle of wine that Steve Spurrier gave Dan Mullen for breaking his record for offensive yards in a game. And he's a regifter. But I thought it was hilarious. So this was an interesting week with Dan Mullen, because Dan said during the press conference Wednesday, or the actual, we have a Zoom call with the Monday and then a teleconference on Wednesday with the other SEC coaches. And when it got to be his turn, towards the end, somebody asked him about Emory Jones having a cast on or at least a brace on his wrist. And you could tell he was a little perturbed. And he said, I'm not talking about injuries anymore the rest of the year. And I think he's using it for a couple of reasons. The whole HIPAA thing with coronavirus and everything that you're dealing with. But I think he's tired of telling the other team who's hurt and who's not hurt. We still don't know what Florida's lineup is going to look like because we're not being told. And that's – look, we want to know. It's our jobs to find out. I think you want to know as fans. But the bottom line is coaches don't want us to know anything. They don't want anybody to know anything. And I get it. I get it. This is – they're trying to win the game. Whatever they think is going to help them win the game is important. I think there's a lot of you that feel the same way. I don't want to know why Kyrie Campbell was not on the depth chart last week and is this week. I don't want to know that. I just want to know, is it going to help us win the game? That's what a lot of fans feel. We're still going to try and do our jobs. But, you know, Dan did this at Mississippi State, too. In fact, I was sent a video from a beat writer out there about that whole situation where he got really mad because somebody asked him about injuries. And that was his – our policy is not to talk about injuries. So, well, you know, again, I'm not mad at Dan. I understand where he's coming from. We're still going to ask questions because it's our jobs. And our jobs are getting harder and harder every day with what we're dealing with. But, you know, we'll see what happens with that. But, again, just don't get mad at us when we can't tell you why guys are or are not playing, okay? Just don't get mad at us. All right, we'll take a break. We always take a break right here at the start of the show. So we'll do that. We'll come back. We'll talk about more about the South Carolina game. Obviously, we're going to get some spreads that are really interesting this week, and also continue to talk about some of the other things in college football, three things, all that stuff. And Josh Kendall from The Athletic, who covers South Carolina, will join us as our guest this week. I'm in a little bit of agony here, to be honest with you, because the Braves are playing and I can't watch it. It's the way it goes, man. Got a job to do. You got a job to do. After that game yesterday, I should be thrilled just that it's not, because it felt like if they lost that game, it was going to be over. But that's a whole nother story. Let's get a break. We'll come back. We'll talk Florida, South Carolina here on the Duly Noted Podcast.
If you're a Gator fan who believes that more convenience is better, join Vistar and bank any way you want. At a branch, on a mobile device, or at one of more than 20,000 fee-free ATMs across North America. We believe that people have better things to do with their time. At Vistar, we never forget that it's your money. Proud partner of the Florida Gators. All loans subject to approval. Insured by NCUA.
Bring game day tailgates home this season after a stop at ABC Fine Wine and Spirits. Stock up your huddle with beer, hard seltzers, your favorite wine, or something sparkling. ABC is Florida family-owned and has been getting Gator fans ready for kickoff since 1936. Head inside one of their 125 stores around the state or try their curbside service by ordering online at abcfws.com. ABC Access loyalty members can save $10 on wine, 10% on beer and hard seltzers, and earn points toward $5 coupons. ABC, always be celebrating.
All right, welcome back to the Duly Noted Podcast. Again, I apologize for kind of getting distracted there looking at scores and everything, but I'm not going to talk about baseball or Braves, or I may talk a little baseball at the end when we get to three things. All right, Florida, South Carolina is going to be an interesting game. I think the spread just blew me away, being a three touchdown, Florida being three touchdown favorites. I referred to it as a swamp spread because that's the kind of spread you would get with a packed stadium, because people go, well, that's six, that may be 7 points worth of, you know, the crowd may be 7 points towards Florida's advantage. But obviously you're not going to have that kind of crowd. So it did feel kind of like a swamp spread. But I think there are plenty of reasons to be nervous about this game. And you know me, Dooley Downer, I tend to get worried about what could happen, because I have to go home eventually to a wife and daughter who are either going to be happy or sad. It's very important to me. So here's the thing, watching the South Carolina-Tennessee game and watching the old Florida-South Carolina game from last year, that you kind of stood out to me. And one was that they're going to play tough. They're going to play Florida hard. That's one thing about Will Muschamp teams. They play everybody hard. Now, they don't always have success. Look, I'm not saying they didn't play hard against Georgia Southern when they lost to them in one of the most humiliating defeats in Florida history. Played hard, they just didn't execute. They didn't do things the right way. But this was a South Carolina team that gave up 4 sacks. They only rushed, averaged 2.5 yards a running play. They opened up the offense a little more in the second half because the bubble screens they were working weren't, or they like that these are part of the Mike Bobo offense, weren't really working. That is going to be the interesting, to me, cat and mouse game that is going to take place during this game, because Florida likes to pressure. And one way to beat the pressure is to run some bubble screens or screen passes, pure screens or bubble screens. But if you run them, you know, a lot of guys have already taken themselves out of the play defensively because they're in a blitz. It's not going to get to the quarterback because he's already gotten rid of the ball, and now you got guys downfield blocking. So how much does Florida pressure? Will they pressure a lot? They did last year a little bit. I mean, not a ton. I remember CJ had a huge sack in that game. But you know, that's the opposite of on the other side. Are you going to double Kyle Pitts? That's going to open things up on the other side of the field. You know, there's going to be a lot of cat and mouse worth game work here between Bobo and Grantham. Obviously, with Dan Mullen trying to figure out against Boom. You know, Will Muschamp's a defensive coach. He may have a coordinator. Dan Mullen may have a coordinator, but these are the guys in charge of things, calling plays defensively and offensively. So that's going to be an interesting matchup. And actually, last year, they did a pretty good job against Florida. Don't forget, last year, Kyle Trask threw for 4 touchdowns, and that would get you excited thinking about it. He only threw for 200 yards in that game. Now, I know it was raining. If you were there, it was pretty miserable. But it was just more, he was off. Do you remember that game? Kyle Trask was off the whole game. Whether it was the rain or not, I don't know. But he didn't seem to really have it, and they had to kind of come back. Obviously, they were down 20-17 going to the fourth quarter. And Florida scored 21 points in the fourth quarter. They got some breaks. In that game, Kyle Pitts, 5 catches, 29 yards. He did catch a touchdown. But, as you know, I have a saying that is every game's its own game. So what happened last year doesn't necessarily have a ton to do with what's going to happen this year. There are different players this year. In some cases, there are some different coaches, although Florida staff has stayed together, as we know. So you've got that going on, and in terms of what everybody's been dealing with, obviously, it's game two. Often that game is very late in the season, so you can't really compare, Florida playing South Carolina later in the season to playing them in the second game of the season. But it doesn't really matter. This is a different team, and that's a different team. That team has Shai Smith, who is a really good receiver, and he's a problem. You got to figure out what to do about him, because he can get behind you in a heartbeat. And we already saw guys get behind Florida defenders in the second game. What we don't know is how many guys are going to be back. And I mean, guys that were on the depth chart now that weren't on the depth chart before, whether they were suspended, as one player was, I'm not going to go get into names, whether they had grade problems, I'm not going to get into names, whether they had COVID. I know all three of these things happened to a player last week, okay? But I don't want to get into specifics about which ones, because I don't want to get anybody mad at me, okay? So, and there was more than one player who had COVID or at least had tested positive. As Mullen said, and I thought this was something that he's dealing with and every coach in America is dealing with, on Thursday, which would be today, they have another test. I think they've already done it, to be honest with you. And that's when you find out what your roster looks like. I mean, I'm sure you're sitting there, coaches tap, not just coaches, but a lot of people can't stop their feet from tapping or their leg from jiggling because they get nervous. I'm sure that, McElwain was the worst at that. McElwain would sit there and he didn't want to be talking to you because he wanted to get up and go do something else. And his leg would be going a mile a minute. But, yeah, I'm sure that Dan Mullen has had or is having some anxious moments waiting to see who will be able to play in the game. So, and look, this is a huge game for Florida, as we know, because Florida's aspirations are so high. Look, we have run into this whole situation where it felt like the first week of the season cleared the path for Alabama and Florida. You guys might as well book your reservations, right? For the SEC title game. We all know that's not the case, but the appearance is certainly that. Alabama on their side, who looked good? LSU? I don't think so. Texas A&M? No. Auburn? I mean, Auburn was okay. That was a good win for them, but they didn't look like a great team. Mississippi State would look really good, but I mean, Mississippi State's not going to win the West, okay? Okay, so on the Florida side, Georgia's got quarterback issues still. Tennessee looked good, but not like a world beater, and that was pretty much it. So it felt that way. But as you know, you can't overreact to those first games, especially these first games. Like normal first games, you shouldn't react to. But these, because remember last year when Florida played Miami and you wondered if Florida was any good at all the way they played in that game. Felipe Franks looked like crap, blah, blah, blah. Okay, well, you move on and Florida ends up winning 11 games and going to the Orange Bowl. So we have, and with what everything everybody has been through, mental health and physical health, I don't think you want to take too much from that first game. We'll see what the second game looks like. We may be able to tell a little more. We may sit there and go, here's what I see. But for South Carolina, let's say they lose to Florida Saturday. They've still got to play Auburn, LSU, Texas A&M, and Georgia, among the other teams they got to play. And again, I'm a firm believer that Will Muschamp will not get fired this year, even if he goes 3-7, because of the financial situation with the, that everybody's dealing with. And if you got the if you know you're losing $50 million, you're not going to pay a coach $17 million to go away. I just don't think it's going to happen. And like we all know, Will's a very likable guy. But if he wins this game, I'm not saying now all of a sudden you go, oh, South Carolina might win the East. I don't think you say that at all. But what you do say is now the East feels like it's up for grabs a little more, because we all – and I'm going to get to Georgia-Auburn in just a minute. But with the situation at Georgia, Florida's got to put their foot down on the gas right now and get to that Georgia game without a loss. They can lose a game, but they don't need to, is what I'm trying to say. Does any of that make sense? Sometimes I get off on these rants and I don't even know where I'm going with them. So we'll see. Look, I think it's going to be a difficult game. I think they have a good defensive line at South Carolina, the opposite of what Ole Miss had. They've got some good players in the secondary. One of them is injured, but he may be able to play. They lost a linebacker that will hurt them a little bit, but not devastating for them. And like I said, they're going to play hard. They did. It is a create your own energy game, which everybody always has. Like I heard Ed Ogeron talking about, we have to create our own energy. They're going to Vanderbilt. There won't be anybody there. I'm sure a lot of LSU fans have bought up the tickets, but there still won't be hardly anybody in the stadium. So I think going on the road this year, you do have to create your own energy. Usually when you go on the road in the SEC, the energy's there, make it work for you. You know what I mean? I mean, there's 80,000 people at this stadium, and 75,000 or 73,000 of them hate you and want you to lose. Make that work for you. But right now, there's not a lot of energy. It felt like there was a little bit at South Carolina for that game against Tennessee. Like they did a pretty good job of creating energy. But then now they come down here, and they're going to have to create their own energy because it's not going to be a loud stadium. We all know that. And so that's what – I don't know. I'm talking gibberish at this point. And then we'll bring on Josh Kendall from The Athletic, cover South Carolina, and see what he thinks about it all. We'll ask him about, obviously, the crowd that he just – I mean, he just was at a game where there wasn't much of a crowd, and he'll be down here in Gainesville as well. So we'll talk about that. Three things coming up, as well as some of the spreads. You're listening to Duly Noted Podcast at Gatorsports.com. The Duly Noted Podcast is brought to you by Vistar Credit Union. We never forget that it's your money. And ABC Fine Wine and Spirits. Always be celebrating. Okay, welcome back to the Duly Noted Podcast. It's a great pleasure to be joined by Josh Kendall from The Athletic. Does a great job covering South Carolina. He knows this beat inside and out. He'll be down here for the game as well to see the Florida Gators and the South Carolina Gamecocks. Are you bringing that big Gamecock statue down with you there, Josh? Can you fit that in your car?
No, number one, I can't fit that in my truck, even though I got a pretty big truck. Number two, I don't want to, that thing's too expensive. I'm not going to be responsible for that.
Yeah. It is kind of weird that they built it that big, but you know, to each his own.
It's a big statue, and well done for giant fighting chicken statues. It's pretty well done. I'll give them that.
It's probably the Hall of Fame for giant fighting chicken statues. But let's talk about
that's true.
A little bit about the game, and obviously disappointing the way that the game ended for South Carolina on Saturday. Of course, the special teams gaffe. People are giving, Will Muschamp a lot of grief for kicking a field goal there. It was 4th and 12. You know, it wasn't like it was 4th and 3. So I do kind of get it, but at the same time, you know, that's the Will way. What is the temperature up in Columbia about that loss to Tennessee?
Well, I think, you know, Will is to the point here, and this may seem familiar to you, that he doesn't get the benefit of the doubt now. So if you make a decision that doesn't work out, it was the wrong decision, even though, as you say, I mean, that one you could argue 50. I could argue that one 50-50 either way.
Sure.
But Will's not going to get the benefit of the doubt in year five coming off of a 4-8 year. So the temperature is a little high. The game looked a lot like games we've seen South Carolina play of late. You know, they look good enough at times to give folks a little hope they can win, and then they don't. The same thing happened when the Gators came here last year.
Right.
So there is a frustration level, there's no doubt.
Well, I was going to ask you about that, Josh, because, I mean, that was a game South Carolina led in the fourth quarter and got no breaks. I mean, the obvious interference that should have been called on Florida for one touchdown. A lot of people believe that Tyree Cleveland was holding, on the long run by Damian Pierce. So they didn't feel like they got any breaks. It was a raining game, but they still were right there with him. That's got to give them, though, a little bit of confidence going into this game.
I think so. I think that they're very confident. For a team that's what 4-9 in its last 13, they're very confident. That's maybe just the life of a head football coach, but they think their issues are fixable. But the problem when you're in a situation like South Carolina and your program's at the spot where it is they're going to have to fix them all to beat the Gators. They're going to have to get the right answer to a lot of questions. That includes finding more wide receivers right away. That includes the right side of the offensive line playing better. That includes Israel Mukuyama, the cornerback with the groin injury, being healthy enough to play and playing better than he did in the first half before he got injured against Tennessee. So they're just, and that's the start of the list. So they think that they can get all that shored up and have a chance to beat Florida and to beat anybody they play, frankly. But, again, you're going to have to come up with the right answer to a lot of questions.
Yeah, well, obviously, we'll wait and see whether he's able to go or not. But obviously, losing a linebacker whose name is escaping
me.
Sherrod Green. Yeah. I mean, he's a guy who played a lot and made a lot of tackles for him. I mean, how big a loss do you think that is?
I think that they can survive that. Sherrod is a good player, but he's been getting consistent. And the guy they've got behind him, Damani Staley, who your listeners might recognize the name, the son of Deuce Staley, former South Carolina back and now the Eagles running backs coach, is a veteran and a good player and had a good camp. So I think he'll be fine on the weak side. Now, if they get another injury, this is where they are. They get another injury, they're playing a true freshman. So then you're probably in trouble.
I talked to Colin Hill on Tuesday and talked to people about him, and he is a great story to have the three ACL tears and still be the quarterback here, or be the quarterback there. And I mean, obviously, he got a big boost from, coming here and when Mike Bobo came here, knowing the system that Mike Bobo wants to run. But were people really surprised that Ryan Helensky was kind of a little bit of a folk hero last year, was not able to beat him out?
I think that a lot of people, yes, might have been surprised. I think if you understood what was going on, you were looking at things with a dispassionate eye, because like you say, Ryan has been through a ton and has handled the situation with the foundation that his family has started and their situation tremendously, and has been so kind to kids and people in this community. And, he is to absolutely be commended for that. And a lot of people here love him because of that, as they should. And I hate to even – I won't even say – but I'll just put a period there and go to – he didn't play really well last year. The offense was really bad at the end of the year.
Yeah.
He was a true freshman thrown into a tough spot, but it just didn't go well. So you have that. You come in. Mike Bobo looks at the film. In his first meeting with Brian, he says, listen, your footwork is terrible. We got to get some things fixed. So he's got to build this guy back up, his confidence, his fundamentals, basically his throwing motion. And, oh, by the way, I've got a fifth-year guy who knows my system, who remembers things about my playbook that I don't even remember anymore, and he's right here and ready to go. When you look at it like that, it's not a surprise at all that Colin Hill's a quarterback, and they like Colin Hill.
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense. And, he seems like a really good guy just talking to him on the phone, and, he's what he's been through.
Absolutely.
He's been through a ton, too.
Oh, yeah, three ACL tears all on the left knee. I mean, and he is just, every time – just goes back to the training room and spends 6 months by himself grinding through it. So, if heaven forbid, I'm knocking on a little wood here when I can find it, it were to happen again, I mean, everybody would just be devastated. Even people here in Columbia who haven't known him or of him that long, you know, they understand, I think, the work he's put into getting to this spot.
Give me a feel, because obviously we did not go to the Robbie and I did not go to the Florida Ole Miss game. But what, for you, being at a game like that Saturday night, and obviously you're coming down here to this game, what was that like, though, to experience in terms of, you know, lack of fans and, you know, piped in sound, some sound, and just the whole game day experience? I'm sure it was one of the weirdest things you've ever been through, and you're going to have to go through again.
It was weird, and it, you know, I expected it honestly to be a little sad, and it was. Just walking up to the game and it being almost deserted, and it just felt really strange. But you get to South Carolina, and this is a little inside baseball talk, but you'll get it, and I think people will understand. It's a closed press box, meaning
yeah.
big plexiglass closing the whole thing off. So you've got a night game. You're behind plexiglass. There are 15,000 fans in there who are being pretty loud. There's the piped-in music, too. So once you get in there and start focusing on what was an entertaining football game, it didn't feel a ton different. But I think it's going to be different place to place. A place like Florida this weekend, where it's an open-air press box, and you as the media sitting there very much feel the atmosphere more, I think it'll be even more different. So I'm interested to see what that thing looks like, feels like, and sounds like.
Yeah, it will be. We're looking forward to going to a game so we can actually watch it instead of watching TV where they don't always show you where the ball is and misplay. So that in itself is going to be good. But just getting back to the game, you were talking about the right side of the offense. Was it the right side of the offensive line that struggled last week? Because I know that they gave up 4 sacks and only averaged 2.5 yards a run. So that's got to be a concern for them, because that was a concern last year, as I recall.
It feels like it's been a concern for a while. They thought they were going to be okay there this year. Then I started getting worried about how they were going to be when they couldn't find a second tackle. They couldn't settle on a second tackle in camp. They kept rotating, you know, 3 or 4 guys, including a true freshman, and saying all of these guys might start or maybe we'll have a rotation. To me, that's a red flag when you can't just find a guy and say this is my number 2 tackle. So they settled on a sophomore or a redshirt freshman named Ja'Kai Moore, who actually had a couple of starts last year. And he played okay, but about like you would expect from somebody who had an inconsistent camp. Then their right guard, who they really expected a lot from, Javon Quinn, just didn't play that well. So now they're back in a situation of finding out who we're going to play at right tackle, or maybe we've got a guy who's better at left tackle and move Dylan Wanham from the left side to the right side. So, you know, game 2, and you're trying to figure out how to jiggle your offensive line to get a better play out of it. So, you know, again, that's just one of those questions they got to come up with a good answer to.
And as you said, trying to find a second receiver, Shai Smith is really good, and watching him in that game, he reminded me a little bit of Elijah Moore, maybe a faster, not quite as big Elijah Moore, but that's what the kind of player he reminded me of.
Yeah, there was a question mark coming in the season, I think, or at least for me, there was a question mark. Could he step up and be a consistent number one receiver? He had always been the other guy and a real weapon with his speed as the other guy. Well, he had to be the guy, and so far, so good. He really stepped into the role. He caught a lot of tough balls over the middle. They moved him around a lot. Now, Tennessee, without the benefit of seeing what this offense looked like firsthand, didn't have a lot in there to double cover him. And that's a tough transition to make during the game, to sort of rework your secondary coverage plans. But I expect Todd Grantham to say, you know, to put 2 guys and say, don't lose this guy, and we'll worry about everybody else, because right now you don't really have to worry about anybody else.
Yeah, there's no question about it. Just real quick before we let you go, Josh, we appreciate your time watching. And I know it's only game 1, and I keep trying to caution people about overreaction, but what did you think of Tennessee?
Yes.
Because Tennessee obviously is very full of themselves, longest win streak in the nation, beating South Carolina twice during that win streak. So, but what did you think of their team?
I thought that they were okay. Again, I'm with you. In this season, I'm going to give people credit for coming out and being smooth and operating smoothly and not getting a ton of false starts, et cetera, et cetera. But, you know, I don't know if they're a great team. You could make your argument either way. Jarrett Garantano missed a lot of passes. He hits those passes, they might beat South Carolina by 2 touchdowns, and we're thinking about Tennessee, or I'm thinking about Tennessee totally different. But he didn't. He also threw a couple of absolute dimes in key situations. Mm-hmm. a long third down conversion to the sideline when South Carolina looked like it might gain some momentum, and then the touchdown that proved to be the game winner. So if he misses those two instead of another throw, you know, then they lose and we think they're terrible. So I still don't have a feel for Tennessee. I don't consider them an SEC East contender.
He's Josh Kendall from The Athletic. We appreciate his time. We'll take a break. We'll come back with more of the Duly Noted Podcast at Gatorsports.com. Okay. Appreciate Josh Kendall for joining us here on the show, the big show. There was a couple of things that did happen in college football that I thought were important. Well, the one thing that wasn't important is the college football playoff committee moved back the first announcement of their release of the teams that are in it to November 24th. Obviously, because the Big Ten and Pac-12 have now decided they're going to play, they had to move it back, you know, at least let them get some games in before they were going to do that. But then also Larry Scott of the Pac-12 proposed that they expand the playoff this year, which is, I think a lot of people have been talking about and pushing. And it was shelved. They said, no, I'm not going to even consider it. Look, there's a lot of logistics, a lot of money, a lot of different things that go into this. We all would like to see it go to 8 this year. It will go to 8 eventually, but it's got to be set up in advance. The money that the networks are paying to have these 4 games is the money the networks are paying to have these 4 games. Adding 4 other games on the campuses doesn't necessarily do much for them. That's my theory on it anyway. So we aren't going to see anything like that. Certainly not going to see anything like that this year. I think a lot of people thought we might, but we're not going to. Also this week, the SEC approved a bunch of waivers, not a bunch, but a couple. Cade Mays to Tennessee, who went there from Georgia, and Joey Gatewood, who actually, my brother, I knew his, it's his uncle, I believe. Anyway, Donnell Gatewood, he was a heck of a basketball player. My brother played with him, actually, so we know the Gatewoods. And he's at Kentucky, went from Auburn. I don't know how much of a factor they're going to be in any of their games that are being played this week. But the SEC said, look, we'll do it this year, and we should do it this year. That's what they should have said. We should do it this year with what all these kids are going to. We should let everybody play wherever they want. But it ain't going to happen again. We're not going to continue to let teams or players within the conference transfer and be eligible immediately. So that was the message that Greg Sankey sent out. This is a one-time deal. So I thought that was interesting. Let's talk about the spreads. We like to talk spreads here, not for gambling purposes, but simply to let you know what they are and what we think of them. And we'll start with the Florida one, which opened up at 22, and I went, oh, that is crazy. Are you crazy? Well, it dropped down. The wise guys got a hold of it, and it did drop down different places. It's 18, it's 17.5 some places. So I knew that people were going to jump on 22. 22 is a lot of points, but there is this impression of Florida, and it may be absolutely 100% right, but there is this impression of Florida that this is a juggernaut offense, that it is Joe Burrow from last year. LSU from last year, it was Ole Miss, and the Ole Miss defense, nobody forget that, okay? Let's see what they do over time. I think they've got, you know, look, we all know what Dan Mullen can do. We've seen what Kyle Trask can do. We know what Kyle Pitts is. We think Trevon Grimes is going to be, I mean, this could be the game where he goes off. So they have a chance to be really good, but I got to see it against better defenses. Like I've said, Ole Miss might have been the best offense Florida plays all year, and it might be the worst defense they play all year. So we'll see what happens as we go forward. So that was that spread. Missouri is an 11.5-point underdog to Tennessee at home. which I don't even know how much you take into consideration the home field advantage anymore. It used to be like, you know, I like them, but I can't see them winning at this place, or I can't see them going on the road and winning that game. There are travel issues that you have to deal with. And I didn't even look to see how many home teams and how many road teams won, but I think mostly it was, well, Tennessee won, Florida won on the road, Mississippi State won on the road. So obviously it wasn't too big of a deal, I don't think, for those teams. Alabama won on the road, but they were playing Missouri. I've got a couple teams that I'm going to talk about here in the SEC. I have no idea whether they're good, bad, terrible, indifferent. I don't know. Missouri's one of them. You know, okay, so they outscored Alabama in the second half. All they did was give Nick Saban something to work on. Moral victories certainly don't matter in this league. We all know that. Tennessee, they're going to win this game. I don't think there's much question about it. And then we're going to see – then their schedule gets obviously significantly more difficult, and we're going to see where they go from there. In fact, I think they have the Dogs next week, yeah, and Alabama and Auburn coming up. So anyway, Oklahoma, 7-point favorite over Iowa State. I just threw that one in there for you. I would – see, like Iowa State, because they got a win last week, and everybody's like, oh, they bounced back. Eh, I don't think so. I think Oklahoma will be the team that bounces back and roll them. Texas A&M is an 18-point underdog at Alabama. Now, I would stay away from this game, but you know what? I wouldn't be surprised if Alabama goes way over, because I just think – I don't think – and this is something I may be writing next week. I don't know yet for sure what I'm going to write next week. But I heard Jacob Hester say this, and he called it the curious case of Kellen Mond. And I said, man, I'm stealing that. I may quote Jacob Hester on it, because he said it. But he was talking about how he's tired of being sold a bill of goods on Kellen Mond. Watching that game against Vanderbilt Saturday night, I watched the whole game, and I was like, what the? What? I thought this guy was supposed to be good. So there's no reason to think he's going to go into Tuscaloosa and win that game against a team that does look really good. I mean, this Alabama team, I believe, is loaded for bear. And, look, it's just a matter of time. Get us to the SEC title game undefeated. We'll play whoever you bring over there, and that'll be a tough game, but we think we can beat either Alabama or either Georgia or Florida. And then line up the playoffs and let's go play. I think they're ready for it. Auburn is a 6.5 or a 7, depends on where you look, underdog against Georgia. And I don't know what to think about this game, because Georgia doesn't know what they're going to do at quarterback. I mean, I'm sure Georgia does, but the people who cover Georgia don't know, because they really believe that JT Daniels isn't going to be playing, even though he got cleared finally. And it could be that they go with Stetson Bennett, Thurston Howell III, I call him, and end up he was good enough to get the win and spark them on Saturday, obviously, but they're playing Arkansas. Is he going to be able to do that against an Auburn, against a Kevin Steele defense? That's going to be fascinating. I think that game's a total toss-up. It is a hard one to figure out. LSU, 21-point favorite over Vandy. I know Vandy played their hearts out in their opener, but they will. It won't go well for them, I don't think. They don't have any – I mean, the Seals kid's not bad. I like him a lot. But I just don't think they have enough offense to make that happen. Arkansas, 18-point underdog at Mississippi State. They got to settle Felipe down. Obviously, guys had trouble getting lined up for some reason, and he was trying to line them up. It reminded me of the game, the Florida-Louisville game in the Sugar Bowl, and they practiced this one play. This was going to be the first play of the game. They practiced it 100 times, and they go – to line it up, and what happens? Jordan Reed's supposed to go in motion. didn't go in motion. They had to, you know, the quarterback was Jeff Driskel, had to get him to go in motion. Other guys were lined up wrong, had to get them set. Finally threw it just a little bit behind a guy, got tipped in the air, run back for a touchdown, game over. It felt like the game ended at that moment. So these things can happen to you, but I would not I'll be interesting. I actually texted Mike Leach last night because he's an interesting dude. And he texted me back, so we'll just keep it private, but he's a good guy. And then finally, Ole Miss is getting 6 at Kentucky, and I have no idea what Kentucky is right now. I just don't – like, I think they're struggling to get their identity back because Terry Wilson was really good 2 years ago, and then he got hurt, and they went to the Lynn Bowden, you know, just running him you know, having a wide receiver playing quarterback and pretty much just running the ball and being more physical than the other team, and they won a bunch of games that way. And now Terry Wilson's back, and he made a bad throw. Obviously, it ended up being a pick six that was called back, but it was a terrible throw. So do they bring Joey Gatewood in and say, hey, let's go back to that old running game where we just run the ball with the quarterback? So I don't know what they are. And I think Ole Miss, obviously, I think offensively, I don't think that was a fluke what they did to Florida. I think Gator fans will hope it's a fluke what Ole Miss did, that Florida's defense isn't going to play like that all year. But I don't think it was a fluke in terms of I think their offense is that good. And I think Lane Kiffin's a really good coach and really good at calling ball plays. So we'll see how that works out. But I think we'll find out if Ole Miss is a team that is gonna their over under is probably 3 or 4 maybe. Can they be a 5-win team? They beat Kentucky. You'll start to believe that they can be. But defensively, they got to get better. And maybe Kentucky just says, hey, look, let's just pound the ball at them, not let Lane Kiffin have the ball, and go win this game 21-7. That may be their philosophy. We'll see. All right, those are the spreads. And now your favorite time of the year, or the week, or the second time of this week, we go to 3 things.
It's time for 3 things.
Number one, we're going to talk a little baseball here. The 8 games in 1 day playoff system, I don't know that it works, but I think you have to give baseball a lot of credit for making a lot of this stuff work. And to have 8 games in 1 day, if you're a baseball geek, I'm not. I did watch a ton of it, though. 8 playoff games in 1 day, that was pretty cool. Now, I didn't watch it all, and obviously was obsessed with the Braves and Reds, but I watched a lot of it. But I heard Tim Kirkton say, this is the greatest day of my life. And for baseball people who are really into baseball, it had to be a pretty cool day. Now, number two, the Yankees played the longest game ever. Yeah, I was sitting there watching the game. I had that game on. I had Lakers Heat game on, and the Lakers are blowing out the Heat, and I'm like, well, I'm not staying for that, and I'm ready to go. I've had enough baseball. Ended up being an unbelievable game, longest game ever played, 9-inning game. 4 hours and 50 minutes. If you add in the rain delays, it was even longer because they had 76 minutes of rain delays, but it was 4 hours and 50 minutes just of baseball. The game has slowed down in the playoffs. Guys are slowing down. More commercials are longer. Everything gets a little bit slower, and I think it's one of the criticisms, but I think baseball has really the game is so different. When I was a kid, guys bunted all the time. Nobody bunts anymore. It's a different game. Everybody's swinging for the fences. It is what it is. But now Yankees versus Rays, that'll be pretty interesting. And I have to say, because I don't like the Yankees, go Rays. Yeah. And number 3, we saw the first COVID outbreak in the NFL, and the game has been postponed between the Titans and the Steelers to week four. Hopefully, this is not does not become a big deal where it becomes a bigger issue. We already saw what happened in with the Raiders, where they showed up for a charity event, and it was a great cause, and they raised a ton of money. But the guys, you got to wear masks, man. Now what they've done with, and obviously Derek Carr apologized, said we should have been wearing masks. You're right. We screwed up. But I think where a lot of people are getting the more comfortable they get, the more nervous I get because I'm a worrier. Now they're doing this with the coaches where they're saying, look, if you don't wear a mask on the field, and I believe it's totally an optics thing, but it's what they've ordered. And if you ordered, if the NFL has ordered you to do something, you better do it. But if you don't do it, we're not going to let you coach. Or we're going to take away draft picks. How about that? So they're really getting serious about this, and we'll see where it goes from here. All right, that's going to do it for the podcast. I hope you guys enjoyed. We'll be back next week, Tuesday, to talk about what happened with the Florida-South Carolina game and so many more games. Look, the SEC, now that the SEC's back, it is the only thing that seems to matter. Those are the games. There really aren't very many other games worth watching, to be perfectly honest with you. I'll watch them, but mainly I'm going to be glued to the SEC once I get home. I'm really looking forward to Georgia and Auburn. I think it could be a really – look, it might be a boring game, and that won't be a lot of points, and I think both teams' defenses are going to play good, but it's going to be an interesting game. So I look forward to it. All right, I'm going to get out of here for now. Until next time, this is Pat Dooley, the sports columnist of the Gainesville Sun. I am deep. I am way back, and I am out of here.